Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online on a busy Monday. It's October 17th. Action-packed show for you on tap today. We'll recap what we saw over the weekend, talk about some of the pretenders and contenders that Payne hit on, a silver screen adaptation of Girl on a Train and our thoughts on that big flick. Of course, talk about some of the look-ahead numbers and our big game breakdown for Monday Night Football, the New York Jets on the road at the Arizona Cardinals, provided by the American Gaming Association. But before we get into all of that great stuff, Payne, a pretty nice weekend for Bet the Board listeners, cashing on Thursday night and following it up with a rocking chair cover Sunday out there by the bay with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, NFL Week 6 treated us well. Saturday college football, I was a little hesitant after getting it in the tookus with UCF late. I said, I hope this isn't an indication of things to come for Sunday or moving forward. So it was a positive winning NFL Sunday again, and under the weather a little bit today. Struggling to get going. The green juice did have a helping effect. Hopefully we can get it turned around with a nice late game performance, Osweiler style.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried this morning. I didn't have you officially listed as doubtful on the injury report, but there was definitely some talk amongst the inner circle that you were going to hit the report as questionable. So I'm glad to see you're fighting through it and persevering so the listeners can get all that top shelf analysis.
Email, baby. You got to check the email.
It's amazing how you get so in tune with looking for text messages or phone calls from time to time that you don't check the email if you're not going through updating. That's the one reason that I actually miss my BlackBerry, where those alerts pop up immediately. The iPhone, I got to go push alerts. I got to refresh. I got to do everything under the sun to get that damn thing to work the way it's supposed to.
It's nice. What did you do for your BlackBerry Bold? I envisioned some little spot in the desert next to a couple dead bodies. You buried that thing?
I actually have three BlackBerries that they sit in my junk basket, so to speak, on my desk. I haven't quite figured out the proper send-off. Normally, if I were to go back to my college years where I had a bit of a pyro streak in me, I would have tried to melt them all together. I'm not sure that it, however old I am, what am I, 34 right now, that is a proper adult-like response. If I were to try and melt those three BlackBerries together on my balcony, I might be cruising for a bruising as far as HOA fines are concerned.
No mystery as to why you get trolled on Twitter.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I didn't really say it was a big mystery. You tell me it's because I'm passive-aggressive. You tell me it's because I have these unique foibles. I like to think it's the inconsistencies that often make the man.
Whatever lets you sleep better at night, bud.
I mean, when you only sleep 3 hours, it gives you a lot of time to do some thinking and some introspection and soul-searching from time to time.
All right, let's get this thing started. Nobody wants to hear this crap.
Hey, I mean, every now and again, they want to try and see the humanizing traits of you, their favorite analyst, and me, the jackass host. But sure, we'll recap the big weekend, and we may as well start with the biggest story that'll linger from Week 6. That, of course, the injury to Big Ben and the Steelers' outlook drastically changing. We've already seen the number overhauled, as you'd expect, for their showdown this weekend against the Patriots. But where do we go on the Steelers' outlook for the division, upcoming weeks, fantasy purposes, futures, you name it, and of course the impact of the point spread that we're going to see from this team hailing from Pittsburgh.
It's extremely unfortunate, and most of the groups are holding some kind of future on the Steelers, whether it was a win total, a division future, a conference future, and obviously a Super Bowl future. So we're kind of all in the waiting mode. We're waiting with bated breath. We'll know more once the surgery is done, and I'm not here to play doctor. That's not what I do, but apparently there's a few ways to repair your MCL, and depending on the kind of surgery, whether it's a cleanup or a total repair, will kind of determine the length of recovery. So if you go in, clean things up, Big Ben could be back in a few weeks. If it's a full repair, you're looking at something similar to Derwin James with the Florida State Seminoles in that 4 to 6 month range, pending on, you know, how fast of a healer you are, how aggressive you are with rehab. That said, the positions are a bit different, right? Big Ben, tough. He kind of knows how good this Steelers team is. Maybe he comes back a little bit early, is less effective, a less mobile version of him, but that's got to be better than what Landry Jones is at 100%. So in terms of the spread, I think you're looking at least a touchdown. We know what Landry Jones is at this point. Obviously, Le'Veon Bell being back kind of helps things a little bit. He's a bell cow. You can just give it to him. You got a two-headed running back system there. So it becomes a lot of ground and pound. And so Bell being back certainly helps the offense with Big Ben going down.
Put yourself in the GM chair for a second. Can you explain to me why the Steelers, who know that Big Ben is very prone to missing stretches of games, whether it's one game, two games, etc., why they go into the season thinking that Landry Jones is a viable alternative at the backup quarterback position?
Listen, it's the NFL, and you either have a quarterback or you don't. And there are a lot of teams, hell, I would say two-thirds of the NFL right now isn't in love with their signal caller. So attempting to find a backup becomes a difficult task. I can tell you firsthand here down in Miami with their situation. It's basically like health insurance. It's an insurance policy, basically, is what it becomes. You don't actually need it until you need it. And right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers absolutely need it.
What do you think this does for, I know some of our listeners out there want to know a fantasy perspective for guys like Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown. I mean, we look at this Steelers team, and obviously the headlines will be the offense, but the main issue yesterday was a defense that was absolutely decimated, allowing Jay Ajayi to run for 200 yards. I think he's still ripping off carries for 5 to 7 yards a pop.
From a fantasy perspective, I think it's going to be tough for Antonio Brown. He's had a slow start. I know a lot of guys were drafting him number one overall in those PPRs. It hasn't been a great start to the season, and now you think maybe this is just going to be a total abortion. In terms of Le'Veon Bell, obviously he becomes the focal point for defenses, but he's that good, and I think his load becomes much increased, so you might have an evening out effect. He might dip. He might not dip that much simply because he's going to end up with more touches.
And from the Steelers, we know that this team will find a way to get themselves back on track, assuming that Big Ben will be back out there later in the season. A couple of teams we watched yesterday who may have bigger issues than a quarterback being sidelined. And let's start with what was the game of the week, at least going into things. The Packers and the Cowboys. Green Bay, 4.5-point favorite. We saw money come in, push that number as high as 6 before kickoff, and you had a lot of listeners start to panic a little bit. It wasn't a game we officially gave out on the podcast, but we mentioned in great detail. We thought the Cowboys would be the side. Dallas looks like a hot knife through butter early on in the game. Green Bay's run defense, I think, was a bit of a fraud, but that's not my concern. It's that Packers offense that still doesn't seem to have a swagger through 6 games so far this season.
Hell, it was even concerning to me. It got down to soft 3.5 earlier in the week, and we did see a lot of the math groups buy that down, laid 3 with the Packers. And when you look at home field advantage, when you look at the outlook of these two teams, you see that number and you say, Jesus, you know, the Cowboys were laying 3 on the road out of Washington. Now you're laying 3 at Lambeau Field to Aaron Rodgers. I have to make a numbers play here, but the situation outweighed it. And you know what? I ended up getting scared off the game as well. Wish I were on the Cowboys. Got confirmation, obviously, that, you know, it didn't matter. They were still taking 6. That's why we did see it dip back down to that dead zone 5, 5.5. Wish I had a Cowboys ticket. Did not. And I think that's the biggest key point to this podcast, right? Just because we aren't giving out free picks on every single game, we're kind of using this as teaching methods. And if you're in your pools and we're simply saying, listen, there's one side to this game, just because we haven't bet it yet, there's a clear side, you're going with that side. Or in reference to the Dolphins in Steelers, you know, it was Dolphins or pass. You could hear that. We saw, you know, what that weather does to guys. You're playing in your black jerseys. We saw Timmons losing his lunch there at the goal line in the second quarter of that game. So hopefully, you know, in your pools, you use the Dolphins, and in your survivors kind of stayed away from the Steelers. So you should be getting more from this podcast than just here's a free pick on every single game.
Well, I think that's an important takeaway, and not to beat a dead horse. When you look at the podcast that we record on every Monday and Thursday, our goal here, Payne, and I think you and I are obviously on the same page. It's part of the reason we work well together, is we want to give out the biggest and strongest stuff. Our goal here isn't to try and give you 16 winners in all 16 games on a card. Anybody who claims they have an edge in every single NFL game being played on a Thursday, a Sunday, or Monday is just kidding themselves. And unlike other folks out there, our goal when we give out a game, we expect to win. It's like that Chris Rock skit. You're supposed to pay taxes. You're supposed to take care of your kids. It's not like we're surprised with the results that we're getting by doing the hard work trying to isolate the strongest positions and give you a game like Kansas City that, hey, yeah, we didn't take the best of the number on the podcast and record on Thursday, said pick them and laying one was okay. Didn't really matter in that particular spot when Oakland had one drive and Kansas City outscores them 26-3 over the final 54-55 minutes of the game.
Yeah, absolutely, and not to beat a dead horse here, we can't give out everything on this podcast. That's kind of just the reality of it, but what we can give out is frankly better than what's out there. That's just the reality of the situation. And one thing we've kind of talked about is the strength of the position that we're giving out. And when, you know, I personally took plus one on Kansas City, moving across zero, not a huge hindrance, not a huge loss of value. So laying one was fine there as well, obviously. That game was just that strong. So that's the key for us, is when we have something, when we actually bet it, we'll give it out. We're just not going to give out free picks on every single game, specifically ones that we haven't bet yet.
No, for sure. And it's good to see a lot of the listener interaction that we get on the Twitter handle for the podcast, the official account, at Bet the Board Pod. Encourage folks to follow that if you aren't already. Feel free to ask questions. We're going to do our best to try and answer them. Game days get a little bit tricky, as Payne has said. Not exactly time that we're sitting around twiddling our thumbs trying to take advantage of some of those final positions, halftime numbers, and everything else that presents itself. But fire away. We're going to always do our best to try and interact with you and get back to you as best we can. Payne, before we close the book on this Packers-Cowboys game, I haven't gotten your opinion yet on what clearly is the biggest topic surrounding this team and will be coming out of the bye week. Tony Romo versus Dak Prescott. I'm on one side of the fence, and I think my position isn't exactly one of strength, where I'm going to make the case that Tony Romo, with this ground game, if Jason Garrett were to stay committed and run the ball 32-plus times like he did against the Packers, Romo's going to do just fine. In the past, the problem the Cowboys have had, they want to get away from the run. They want to let Romo sling the ball around. And that's why you see the turnovers. I'm not sure which side you lean on in this. Do you keep Dak in there under center after the bye week? Or if Tony Romo's healthy, does he reassume the starting quarterback position?
When we talked about this last week, I said, knowing what I know of Dak Prescott, he's extremely smart. He's cerebral. He's going to say the right things. And sure as heck, 2 days later, he says, this is Tony Romo's team. That stance has changed just a touch. He's now saying, you know, whatever the coaches feel is fine. I'm going to do what they tell me to do. It was the perfect answer. Now, the problem becomes the locker room. And apparently, Dak Prescott has become a leader in the locker room. And so that could now be an issue, and that may change how I feel. The key here, though, is you don't have to rush Tony Romo back. They've rushed him back in years past. The key here is let Dak go out. Let him play the Eagles. And if you are smart, if you are an organization, I'd like to think, regardless of what we say about Jerry Jones and being too hands-on, he's a billionaire for a reason. And so if you are going to go to Romo, you want to set him up with a layup. And that layup, none better than giving him the bye week and going against the Browns defense. And if Romo goes out there against the Browns and even puts up 220 yards, throws for two touchdowns, no interceptions, it buys you some time. Suddenly he might not look great against the Steelers, but then mentally everyone's going to say, oh, well, he was awesome in his debut. Then it buys you some time. It gives you a couple games to maybe audible back to Dak if that's what's needed. But if you're smart and you do go Romo, you do it against the Browns defense.
Yeah, and I was going to say, coming out of the bye, they obviously draw the Eagles in a game that'll be on national TV, Sunday Night Football, to be precise. You give Dak that big stage. Doesn't it make it harder, though, to go to Tony Romo if Dak's outstanding against one of your biggest division rivals?
Yeah, absolutely. It becomes very difficult, but I think this is business. You know, as much as we love this and we all are amped for the weekends and we have our fantasy lineups and we're betting, the reality is the NFL now pushing towards a $1 trillion business with billion-dollar employees and teams. Everything is a business decision, and that's really what this comes down to. Tony Romo has been the cinder block foundation to this organization that hasn't always been the best, and I think you have to repay him for that, but it's a quick switch. If he's not 100% healthy, if he struggles, it's a quick flip of that switch, and you go back to Dak, you know what he has, and again, I think Dak is mentally strong enough to ride the pine for a few games and be mentally prepared to come back if that's what's needed.
Well, we know what the acronym for NFL is sometimes in circles. It's not for long. It is a replacement league. It's not about what you've done for me in the past. It's what you can do for me now and moving forward. It should be a fascinating story to see unfold in the coming weeks regarding the Dallas quarterback situation. Falcons and Seahawks, a game going in that we thought was going to teach us quite a bit about both teams, and anyone who spent time watching that game on Sunday afternoon saw what felt like a tale of two halves. Seattle built a 17-3 lead. Atlanta outscores them 21-0 in the third quarter before Seattle ultimately gets a late Stephen Hauschka field goal. I know it's a loss for the Falcons, but did that show you that Atlanta is here to stay and a viable contender that we discussed on Monday? Or do we have some reservations about Seattle and their defense surrendering 24 points at home off the bye to this Falcons offense?
This is the very first game I have queued up on the All-22 that I'm going to go back, watch again. Didn't get to watch the game in its entirety, watched a bunch of it. The one interesting aspect to this game is, and I always like to do this when I go back and watch, is find the games where there's discrepancy. So we had groups that laid it with Seattle. We had groups that took it with Atlanta. And I just wanted to see who's right. I came away being extremely impressed with the Falcons. It was a tough spot, tough travel situation. You get down in a hostile environment by 14, but you regroup at halftime. You come out like gangbusters. Some unfortunate, you know, late whistles that did and did not take place. They outgained Seattle again. And in general, when you look at these net yards per play and kind of break that down, it's simply the average yards you gain on offense per play minus what you give up on defense per play. And the Falcons came in number one in the NFL, net positive 1.3 yards per play. And then well over a half, you look at this, and they outgained Seattle again. That addition of Alex Mack, the center position, we've talked about this ad nauseum. It's worth its weight in gold. We're now in that fantasy era. We all want to look at wide receivers. We all want to look at the running back position. But Alex Mack has provided stability, provided chemistry, and he has been a saving grace for this offensive line that is now very, very good. It was horrible in years past, and we all thought it was Matt Ryan regressing a little bit. But that offensive line was bad. Now he's not getting pressure in his face. It's allowing him to step up, make some big throws, and Alex Mack right now is the silent MVP of this Falcons team.
And both the Falcons and Seahawks, intriguing games in their own right this coming weekend, which we'll cover in greater detail on Thursday's podcast. And last but not least, Payne, the Sunday night football game. We say tale of two halves. This was a tale of one team being better on both sides of the ball for, we'll call it, what, 52, 55 minutes in the form of the Indianapolis Colts, the Texans, and we have trashed Brock Osweiler at great lengths about his progress as an NFL starting quarterback. But to Houston's credit, they showed an awful lot, erasing a 23-9 deficit late to come back and win a pivotal division matchup against the Indianapolis Colts. What do we get as our major takeaways on both these teams moving forward?
Brock gave everybody on social media the middle finger. And I was actually about to send out a tweet myself in regards to him actually getting credited for a touchdown pass on Lamar Miller's wizardry there. But I said, I'm going to be patient. And good thing, because he came up spades in the clutch. That ridiculous laser seam throw to Fedorowicz on the touchdown, and bigger than the actual throw, was him looking comfortable. You see a lot of hesitation from Brock. Maybe the naysayers kind of getting in his head. And when you play not to make mistakes, your offense has a very, very low ceiling. Once he started to kind of let it rip, you know, things got better. And in overtime, he started kind of stopped staring down his blankie, his pacifier in Hopkins, and he let Strong go to work. That was a huge, huge throw for him. He had confidence. And when you look at that secondary, Rashawn Melvin was guarding Strong on that play. Just to give you an idea, you know, if you've listened to this podcast, how thin and beat up the Dolphins secondary was. Melvin was cut from Miami prior to the season, just to paint that picture. So he got confidence in Jalen Strong, located him, nice deep ball there. A lot of resiliency. Maybe this is something a young quarterback needs moving forward, that confidence builder as he heads to face his old foe in the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, he will have his hands full on Monday Night Football, a game that we will preview in great detail a week from today when Houston goes into the Mile High City to take on a Broncos team that'll be entering that game off of two losses with extra time to prepare. Real quick, Payne, before we close the book on the recap of this past weekend, wanted a quick thought or two on a couple of these teams. Panthers, Redskins, and Bills, what you saw over the weekend.
Panthers, Cam Newton. It's like he's lost his girlfriend, so to speak. He has not been the same guy mentally. Once Lombardi slipped through his hands, you can see it. His facial expressions, his body language, something is going on there. He just looks like a lost soul. And don't know if he's sitting on the couch, you know, eating the bonbons or what's going on, but something is wrong with him. Obviously, the defense has some question marks in the secondary, but Cam Newton, not looking great right now. Something's wrong with him.
Redskins, a team we were down on. Were you surprised with their performance against the Eagles?
Offensively, I was very surprised to see what Gruden drew up, especially without Jordan Reed. That is a guy who makes that offense go. And if you go back over the course of time, he's missed significant spaces with concussions and what that offense does without him. I was surprised to see how Cousins and how effective they were offensively. Great game plan, back-to-back weeks now where Jim Schwartz's defense has been on its heels. So concerning there when it comes to the Eagles. When it comes to the Bills, tough. We went under 8 wins. Our season win totals are just not looking good after a very, very good start. They've reeled off 4 in a row. Tough schedule coming up. I hate to bash the Ryan brothers. Maybe it was a positive they let the offensive coordinator go. They found themselves in some nice situations, though. You get an Arizona team that did, you know, is a little bit down. You catch the Patriots in a tough spot there with a third-string quarterback that's not 100% healthy. So they've had some breaks. That's kind of been the saving grace for them. But they have played pretty well. You know, you travel across the country, face the Rams. The best element of the Rams is that defensive front. Three starters are out. So they've been very fortunate with not only who they've played, but what's been available for the teams they've played.
Sometimes you want to be the beneficiary of a situation. And like you said, it's not always who you played, but it's when you play those particular teams. You can follow Payne on Twitter. Don't know why you wouldn't be doing so already. His Twitter handle, @PayneInsider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well, @ToddFurman. And of course, the official Twitter handle of the podcast, @BetTheBoardPod. And Payne, if they're looking for more expanded content, where's the best spot to go for all of that?
You just go right to BetTheBoardPodcast.com. Every single podcast we do is archived there. You get it first by going there. You'll be notified once it goes up. Lots of great content as well. You've been writing some great blogs there. We'll have more content in the future. Looking at a couple writers as well to implement some of their thoughts as well. Should have a new piece up there this week. And of course, the gambling swag, the gambling gear. You can get all of your gambling gear at BetTheBoardPodcast.com. And again, we're not looking for anything. We don't want your money for this podcast. You don't need to send us donations when we give you winners. Just support the podcast. We know we're giving out a lot of great information, a lot of great winning information that's putting money in your pockets. Just buy a t-shirt, support the cause, and you can get those up at theboardpodcast.com.
Payne, last week, movie review time. I mean, we saw a movie and you were a little bit, I don't know if apprehensive is the right word. I figured I was going to get a text message. You getting your synopsis after the flick about how the first hour or so felt like it was straight off the Hallmark Channel. We saw Girl on a Train. It's a movie adaptation from a book that I read, which you picked on me for. Yeah. I understand all that. But I'm going to give you the floor for your honest assessment of what you thought the movie was going to be going in, and then what your actual takeaways from the flick were, obviously without giving the ultimate ending away in this thing.
Well, the positive here is the title, Girl on a Train. So as I watched it, there was a girl in the movie, and there was a train. So spades for that going.
And it wasn't a girl on a train scene from Risky Business, for those folks familiar with Tom Cruise's old catalog. There was no scene along those lines, one of the more iconic movie scenes that you'll ever see.
The positive here was very good ending. The first hour of it definitely had the feel of your mother's or sister's favorite Hallmark movie. Maybe a better version of those, but that's kind of what it was. The final 30 minutes was fantastic. Aside from that, there's a little situation in the middle of my movie. Not sure if we go there or not. You tell me.
I don't know.
This is liberty to discuss this.
This is kind of a family podcast, so I'm not quite sure we want to completely branch out. and go into some of the, what would you call them, bathroom escapades or bathroom exploits? I mean, maybe set the scene for what went on without getting into too many specifics.
Okay. So I'm in the movie. I ended up having to travel to Morty Seinfeld stomping grounds, Del Boca Vista, to meet one of my runners for some money. So I said, you know what? Check my phone. Perfect. There is a showtime of Girl on the Train that meets my schedule. It's just going to pop in here on my way back. Get into the movie, and because of this 200 ounces of water, I find myself having to use the bathroom. Fortunately,
maybe we can get a catheter sponsorship for you. So that way when you go to the movies, you won't have to leave and go to the bathroom like two or three times during a two-hour flick.
Fortunately, my theater is across from the bathroom. So I jump out of my seat, jet across to the bathroom. I think an usher almost mistook me for Usain Bolt. So I'm in the bathroom, I'm jetting to the bathroom, and I fly in there, and out of the corner of my eye, I see something that I don't think I want to see, but again, I do a double take. I like women, and if you don't, I'm going to use my Seinfeld voice here. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I have to do a double take here, and I look in the urinal, and I see a man, old guy, pants around the ankles, finger in the tuchus, and it looks like he's potentially pleasuring himself. I immediately jet to the furthest right stall, and at this point, my hygiene is at question, because I don't know if I want to stop wash my hands after using the bathroom. So, quickly jet out of there, back into my theater, and then for like 15 minutes, my body's in the theater. Mentally, I'm not quite there. I think I might want a refund on my movie. Not sure how to handle this, but again, I kind of factor in the situation here a little bit. Don't want to rat anybody out. We're at a movie theater, 11 a.m. in Boca. The median age is probably 71. It's not like it's a Friday night. There's a lot of kids rolling around. So I decided just to let it go rather than say something to somebody. But mentally, I lost about 15 minutes of that movie. Hopefully it was nothing too important.
All we can hope that it wasn't one of our loyal listeners' grandfathers or family members who are going to be offended by that story. But I appreciate you cleaning it up a little bit. It is 7:30 in the morning out here on the West Coast as we record. So not sure I wanted to get into too many specifics. Let's get back to our bread and butter. Oh, before we get there, I guess this movie, a no-brainer. And if this movie doesn't live up to it, the advanced billing and the pedestal you've put it on, Payne, I'm going to be a little disappointed. So why don't you share with our listeners what's on the docket for this week?
I didn't get your review of your book movie.
Oh, I actually thought, you know what?
Was it up to standards of the book?
Oftentimes, the book is always better. This was no different. I think it's always difficult to try and adapt what you've read in print to the silver screen. There were some changes made to the plot, more so in terms of where the story took place. Some of the characters, not exactly the way I'm sure the author would have portrayed them, but you're never going to get an apples-to-apples comparison. And I think anybody who likes to read out there, I know you hate it, unless it pertains to some football articles. May have to give you a summer reading list, though. And I'm not sure, we're going to put
I'm not against reading. I'm not against reading.
You're against
the question
books.
Here, though, becomes, are you doing digital version, or are you buying, like, the leather-bound books, have some type of little library section, because once you read a book, and I would think read a book like this, it becomes like a 30-pound paperweight.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have a few on the digital variety, but I'm not a huge Kindle guy, so I handpick some of the books I have. They stay on the shelf. I have a lot of the classics that I read going all the way back to school. Like you said, I mean, I'm a nerd when it comes to this stuff. This book was actually one that I borrowed from a friend, so don't have this one. I thought it was good. I didn't know exactly how the movie was going to work in conjunction with what I read in the book. I thought they did a pretty good job. Left out some details, but nothing, in my opinion, that was essential to the plot. Clearly, you're going to give up a little bit of character development when you take a 400-page book and turn it into a 90-minute movie.
Ooh. Thank God it wasn't a four-hour movie. That's a positive.
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody would have sat in the theater for 4 hours. Christ, I don't know how many other bathroom trips you would have needed to make, and what else you would have seen there down there in Del Boca Vista.
Who knows? It could have been a Billy Walsh like adaptation. This is my Deer Hunter, Rick. It could have been a 4-hour movie. You never know.
All right, from movies and the movie accountant this week for folks. I know Payne's been talking this movie up since he saw the trailer in the middle of the summer. Ben Affleck should be interesting to see exactly. What we have on our hands. Much more in your wheelhouse, so to speak, there, brother.
Absolutely, and I'm kind of a big Ben Affleck fan for the simple part that he kind of, the career was struggling a little bit, took it into his own hands and said, listen, I'm going to start directing some of these movies. I'm going to start producing some of these movies. And since he started to do that, he's back on the map, produced a bunch of good ones. in love with the movie The Town. That one kind of put him back on the movie film front page, so to speak. So this is one that I like, one that's probably more in our wheelhouse, especially our listeners' wheelhouses. They'll enjoy seeing this with us, and I think that's the positive.
All right, we'll have to check that out. So the movie this week for Bet the Board will be The Accountant. Encourage folks who don't want to spoiler, we don't give away what goes on at the end of the movie, but who want to play along with us, go check that out this week. We'll review that a week from now. Look ahead, numbers, pain. Thursday night may as well start at Lambeau Field with the struggling Packers. Green Bay at BetOnline right now for that matchup is a 9-point favorite. Look ahead number was a 10. The Bears, I didn't want to hammer them too hard, but a little bit disappointing. Let a glorious opportunity for a home win against Jacksonville slip through their fingers. But unlike the Dolphins, the Bears seem intent on tanking when they need to. So I can't take too much away from them. A little bit surprised here that the market has moved slightly in favor of the Bears.
Not at all. Something is wrong with this Packers team, specifically Aaron Rodgers. You just kind of have to wonder. There was off-season knee surgery, and everyone was calling it minor. Was it something a little more significant? He kind of looks like a shell of himself. There were many throws in the Dallas game, many easy throws that he just flat out missed, throwing behind wide open receivers. I wonder if it's something the team knows about or if it's something he hasn't even let the Packers know about at this point, but he is struggling, and it's really nothing to do with anybody else. We talked about Josh Sitton basically being left to the wolves there, but this offensive line has been great. And looking at some of these metric numbers, through five games, Aaron Rodgers has only had 27 pressures on pass snaps. That Packers offensive line is playing great. That 27 pressures is 10 better than the next best team.
And you look at Aaron Rodgers, his completion percentage dead last in the NFL going into the game against the Cowboys, and didn't do really a whole lot to try and improve on that. Vikings, Eagles, probably one of the more fascinating moves. Right now you're looking at the Minnesota Vikings, a 2.5-point road favorite at Philadelphia for the Sam Bradford homecoming game at BetOnline. Going into this week, before we saw the Eagles struggle on the road in D.C. against the Redskins, you were looking at the Eagles a 1-point favorite. So 3.5-point move here based on 1 week's worth of performance for only one team while the other team sat out with a bye.
Yep, through the zero. This will be an interesting game to see where professional money comes in. You'd have to think maybe at 3, that might be a number the sharp guys are looking to achieve. We know the Vikings kind of outdoing their analytical metrics, outdoing their yards per play metrics. So the one thing that you're going to want to have to monitor in this game, it's Lane Johnson. He was officially out with that 10-game suspension. It's a massive loss at right tackle. Wentz had pressure in his face from the right side all game long. They brought in this guy, Big V, as the replacement, gave up 5 pressures on just 29 snaps. Johnson had given up only 5 pressures in the first 4 games, so that's a huge problem moving forward. And if you're going to have to help and chip on the right side consistently, you're basically ending up playing offense with one less player. You know Zimmer, the defensive genius, is going to be smart enough, specifically with a bye week, to scheme something, and he's got 2 good end rushers. So that's going to be the matchup that you want to watch in this game.
Raiders, Jaguars, we talked about Oakland and how they had kind of outperformed what the metrics suggested, obviously ultimately leading us to Kansas City and a pretty easy cover on Sunday. You've seen a move through zero here, not of course to any key numbers, but the Raiders look to be a 1.5-point road favorite on a look-ahead number. Now at BetOnline, you're looking at Jacksonville, a 1.5-point home favorite, fresh off that win on the road in Soldier Field, moving their record in the last 19 road games to 2-17 straight up.
I'm a little upset with you for this reason. You're the guy that's friends with everybody. This is the off-season hype bowl that should have been brought to you by Bet the Board. It has a nice ring to it, so we should have gotten a sponsorship for this, and that's your fault.
We could have had T-shirts made on this game as well. I mean, these were two teams. If you read all the preseason stuff we talked about on our preview podcast, anybody who reads a lot of the talking heads out there, both these teams should have been undefeated coming into this game. We should have been talking about an AFC championship preview here for Oakland going into Northern Florida to take on the Jaguars.
Oddly, it's the Jaguars on paper that are the better team coming into this game. We look at the Jaguars. They were 13th in NFL in net yards per play. The Raiders 29th in net yards per play. They were a negative 0.8 yards per play. That did not change this week against the Chiefs. They gave up 6.3 yards per play. They only gained 5.4, so right there on their season average. And that's probably the big reason this Jaguars team, who probably gained a ton of confidence, a young Jaguars team, you know, on the road, huge come from behind win. Yes, it was the Bears. But those are confidence building wins for young teams. And that's why we've seen not only from the analytical side, but probably the confidence side, this move through the zero.
What's the correct pronunciation of that team? They're the Jacksonville. Is it Jaguars? Is it Jaguars? I mean, what's the correct pronunciation? If we're going to be talking about this game in greater detail on Thursday, we might need some clarification on exactly where we should be enunciating the proper syllables.
Jaguars. Jaguars, I believe. We have a lot of, fancy listeners that apparently grace our presence on Twitter. You can't say Jaguars.
Maybe we should just go with Jags. I mean, I know you've been called a Jag off, yeah. I'm sure, plenty of times in your illustrious career, but I completely digress. Chargers, Falcons, I'll make the case that this is the most intriguing game for me personally coming up on Sunday. Not a major move here. Did go through a key number at 6. You were looking at the Falcons, a 5.5-point home favorite on the look-ahead number. Right now, as we sit here, 6.5 the going rate for the Falcons at BetOnline. Total in this game, 51. Seen it ping-pong all over the place. What do we make of these two teams?
Unfamiliar battle here, which kind of makes me stay off this game a little bit. Chargers, extra time, obviously, so the travel should not be, too much of a hindrance here. The Falcons, they'll want to get back on the winning ways. Obviously, a great, great start. But when you look at that great start, they're just a game ahead of everybody else in that South Division in the win in the loss column. So this becomes a big game for them as well. I don't love a side right now. May do something with the total. But I just want to dig a little bit deeper into that. Nothing at this point for me. Have not bet anything on the early openers.
And safe to say, though, this Falcons team, I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, a much different addition than the team we saw last year start 5-0 and then limp to the finish at 3-8.
You would hope to think so. I the offensive line, again, with the addition of Alex Mack, has been fantastic. You talk about the two-headed system they have at running back provides a little bit more consistency when the one-man band in Julio Jones is getting doubled down. Sanu with a big touchdown grab this week provides, some help on the other side. The defense is, I will say this, still not getting pressure on the quarterback. That's the concern. Still not getting pressure there, but the defense has improved probably a year sooner than we thought. They've changed the entire landscape of this defense. They want to go fast. They want to go young. They are accommodating to these spread offenses. Their linebackers, complete overhaul. They went smaller, faster. Jones was a huge pickup in the draft from LSU. You add Neal, who's kind of been that enforcer. They're going with 5 guys in the secondary. So the scheme adjustment seems to fit with where the NFL's headed. So we've seen that progression from that defense. But the key here is they're going to have to be able to get some pressure along the way. We know that's kind of how you beat this Chargers team, getting pressure in their face. So that'll be something to watch in this game.
Bucks and Niners, this is a game we may as well get out of our system because I don't envision us coming back to it on Thursday. Look ahead number had this game listed as a pick 'em. Tampa now a 2-point favorite at BetOnline. Colin Kaepernick back under center. Wasn't great. I mean, 60-some-odd yards rushing, was under 50% completion percentage-wise. But clearly, San Francisco, the only issue with this team isn't who the man is taking snaps under center. Chip Kelly has his hands full with a roster that clearly isn't up to NFL standards.
Chip Kelly, coming to a college sidelines near you. Already saying not sure who he's going to play quarterback this week. Has not committed to either Gabbert or Kaepernick. Listen, Kaepernick was not great. The deep touchdown pass to Torrey Smith, not a great throw there, wide open, probably one you or I could have made. So if you kind of take that big play out of what Kaepernick did offensively, was not much better. Maybe a little more focus on the football side of things than the mission he's attempting to probably, probably the misguided mission he's attempting to do. The Bucs. Again, big win going into their bye. Young team built some confidence. The key here is now. Again, you're only one game back in that loss column, so this becomes must-win territory. You can get back to 500. This 49ers defense, which was a pleasant surprise early on in the season, now starting to wear down. You're without your defensive leader in Navarro Bowman. We saw what happened once he left that Dallas game. It's been bad since he's been out. You lose your... the guy who gets you going, the guy who gets you set up on defense, the veteran leadership presence, the guy who's going to hold everybody accountable in that huddle, he's no longer there. So that becomes a huge issue for this 49ers defense.
Yeah, don't put me in that class. I think my wet noodle arm, I might be able to chuck the ball 20 yards downfield and it'll look like a wounded duck. So I'll give you credit to make that throw. But as you mentioned, if Torrey Smith isn't completely wide open, that play has zero potential. So I'll give Cap credit for getting the ball out there, but that's about where the extent of it goes. And naturally, it takes us towards the end of the show where people want to know our thoughts on the Jets and Cardinals, the big Monday night game where we've seen line movement all over the place. Of course, our Monday night games provided courtesy of the American Gaming Association, and you can go check out a lot of the great work they're doing there for the ongoing legalization efforts as it pertains to sports gambling. AmericanGaming.org. It's the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. Check out their newsletters that you can subscribe to, AmericanGaming.org/about/contact. And Payne, since we've jumped on this podcast, we've seen this number go all over the place. You've seen Arizona from a 7.5-point favorite down to 7. You have to lay a little bit of juice now if you want to back the Cardinals. Total opened as high as 47, 47.5 in some spots. We're now down to 45.5. I'm not even sure where we go to try and identify not only sharp money here, but where we start with the handicap, trying to exploit some of the X's and O's matchups on the field.
Extremely difficult. And I can tell you right now, there has been, you know, a pretty sharp group taking the points with the Jets, got as high as 8. They grabbed that above the key number of 7. There has been another group, not as much respect, that value bet Arizona minus 7. So in terms of the side, there's been some battling going on there. Probably a little bit more respectable money on the dog. I am not going to be on the side here. We have seen some sharp money on this total. I've seen full game under. I've seen first half under. Again, do not love it. And I think when you attempt to break down this game, I hear a lot of people talking about the tough schedule for the Jets. And that's 100% accurate. But if your efficiency numbers don't account for strength of schedule, you're doing it wrong. So even with the tough strength of schedule, the Jets are 30th in the NFL in overall team efficiency. Wise guys hated this team coming into the season, bet their win total under. They thought a lot of the success last year probably really wasn't warranted. A lot of luck last season. The one underlying thing here in this game is Todd Bowles, having been on Bruce Arians' staff, knows what Bruce wants to do offensively. And we've kind of seen many teams clone what Bill Belichick did in week one, and that simply force Arizona to kind of dink and dunk, force Arians as a play caller and Palmer as a passer to be patient. They don't seem to like that. I think the biggest thing here is the Jets secondary. It's bad. Dead last in the NFL. They're allowing 8.8 yards per pass attempt. It's not just the deep variety, too. They're allowing opposing quarterbacks to complete 72% of their pass attempts. And that's the matchup that would scare me to death here if I'm backing the Jets. The last thing you want is Arizona to be able to pass it deep, which they want to do, and take a lead early in this game. It then forces a Jets team to pass with Fitzpatrick. They're going to be down Eric Decker, so we know what that's kind of done to this offense. And as much as we want to say turnovers are tough to measure and turnovers are a 50-50 proposition and they'll, you know, even out in the long run, you kind of are what you are. And Fitzpatrick has always been a turnover machine. He's got a gunslinger mentality, but unfortunately it comes with a pea shooter arm. I've talked about this for a long time. I'm still waiting on that documentation that he went to Harvard, because the decision-making leaves a ton to be desired.
Well, you think the Jets have to commit to a ground game? Is that going to be their best recipe for success here against an Arizona front that on this very podcast you've said is susceptible to the physical pounding runners between the tackles?
Yeah, absolutely. That's how you have to attack this Arizona team, and I think that's the reason we've seen this total drop. It's got to be a lot of Matt Forte. It has to be. On first and second down, use them out of the backfield. We know one thing, this Cardinals defense, a little bit better this year getting to the quarterback, but in years past has had to manufacture pressure by blitzing. It leaves them a little susceptible to the big play. It leaves them a little susceptible to good runners with good vision. Their gaps are, you know, not a lot of integrity in their gaps. So Forte is going to have to be able to run the ball. We know he loves that screen game. That's something the Jets are going to have to implement, because we know that Cardinals defense likes to be aggressive, and, you know, getting him in the screen game is going to be the key. The other big thing that you're going to want to watch here, again, we're in the fantasy age. We have a lot of ball watchers. The trench battle is where this game is going to be won. That Jets defensive front is fantastic. Can they get pressure on Palmer, make him uncomfortable? That's the question. And again, with this Arizona team, as I've said so many times before, the metrics don't really look the same on film. I don't see that the Cardinals are number two in offensive line efficiency. That's what the metrics say. My eyes don't tell me that, but that'll be the game within the game. The issue for me backing Arizona is simply what we saw kind of in that Dallas-Green Bay game. Is there something wrong with the quarterback? Is there something wrong with Palmer? He has not been the same since that playoff loss to Carolina. And heck, even in the Packers game, a ton of turnovers. He's had issues with the hand, issues with the finger. Is it fully healed? And that's what leaves me on the sidelines right now.
Yeah, in this game, clearly Arizona right now, a two-game homestand that could define their season, both playing out in prime time. Not only the game tonight against the Jets, but they play host to their division rival, the Seattle Seahawks, next Sunday on Sunday Night Football. So we'll get a much better indication of exactly where Arizona's at, if it was just a blip on the radar early in the year, or if this team really does have some major issues as they look towards the ascent back to the NFC Championship and potentially representing the conference. For me, Payne, when I look at this game, and I hate to make parallels to games we've seen in the past, are there any similarities to what we saw from the Jets a season ago on Monday Night Football? A game we gave out on this very podcast. They were catching the number 7, 6.5, maybe even as low as 6. They went into Indianapolis against a high-powered Colts team that we had question marks on and were able to take full advantage employing the ground game. Can we see something similar to that tonight given this line movement?
I think that's what a lot of professionals are kind of gearing towards. And again, everyone is looking at the schedule that the Jets have had. And yes, they've played a tough batch of teams. The key here is, can that defensive line get pressure on Arizona? And if they can, they're going to be in this all night long. And can they establish the ground game with Forte? We know that's what they're going to want to do, because we know that's what's required of this offense, because Eric Decker's now out, and we know Fitzpatrick has a propensity to turn it over when you put the game solely in his hands. The one thing, again, that scares me a little bit is when you're looking at this team and its weapons, there's not much past Brandon Marshall, okay? And you're going to have Patrick Peterson, who sometimes struggles with speed, but when it comes to facing physical receivers, that's what he likes to do, and that's what Brandon Marshall is. So if you negate Marshall from this game, and you would have to think that's what happens, you're kind of mentally searching where this offense is going to come from the Jets. And again, that's why we've seen this total tick down on the opposite side. Arizona, their struggles a little bit in the red zone, and they struggled a little bit in that category last year. They have to get the ground game going, specifically in the red zone, but will the Jets allow them to do that with that great defensive front? And again, for me, just so many question marks. It leaves me on the sidelines in this game right now. Again, you know, we're talking about an 8:30 kick. A lot of time from now, I'm going to be digging deep into this game, acquiring some information, doing some deep dives. If something presents itself in the next 10 hours, you know, we'll give it out on Twitter. Maybe there's a prop we find. You know, don't hound us for anything, but if something arises, you know, we'll definitely give it out on Twitter.
One last thing on the game, injury situation. Safe to assume that Arizona will be out without the services of good old reliable Mike Iupati on that offensive line?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hearing. And on the flip side, Nick Mangold says he's going to give it a go, but he is really, really beat up. If he somehow does not go for the Jets, you couldn't pay me to back the Jets without Nick Mangold, that center. Just the absolute, you know, beast on that offensive line that the Jets are going to need. I know he's going to try to give it a go. He's a tough guy, but we'll see. Maybe he goes down halfway through that game at some point. So Mangold is absolutely critical. You'll want to check for that injury before you bet the Jets.
You know what, Payne? Sometimes when we go out there and we plan these Monday podcasts, I really have no idea what we're going to spin out. You know, we trade notes, we build out our outlines, we figure out what directions we're going to go. But I think we did a decent job today.
Yeah, I mean, I think my bathroom story probably propelled this thing into, you know, one of the greatest podcasts of all time. But
I'm not going to go. I'm not sure.
I won't pat myself on the back for that.
Can tell you one thing, that some of the sponsorship opportunities for wholesome, good American companies may have gone out the window with some of your exploits in the Del Boca Vista Theater. But hey, we are creatures of our environment and of the moment, so we can't always lay out the foundation of exactly what we expect to happen before it does.
No. Still have not heard anything from Smartwater yet. A little disappointed. Do have a friend that does some marketing and promotions for their company. So, you know, fingers crossed. Maybe we get a contact to reach out to us.
Yeah, we're still looking for that liquor sponsor. So no matter how big or small your brewery, distillery is, hey, shoot us a note. We're more than happy to plug whatever liquor we can at 7:30 in the morning Pacific during our normal recording time slot on Mondays and Thursdays. But for Pain Insider, you can follow Pain on Twitter at Pain Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well at Todd Furman. Follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Follow our Thursday regular guest, Dave Mason at Dave Mason BOL. And most importantly, check out the podcast website, bettheboardpodcast.com, for all of your gambling swag. Be the first to listen to the podcast. Great blogs and information to get you to the window more consistently than anybody else out there. Best of luck no matter what you do on Monday Night Football with the Jets in Arizona. We'll be right back with you here, same time, same channel on Thursday, to preview Thursday Night Football between the Packers and Bears and get you set up for a busy week, NFL Week 7. Thank you.